and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm AD Packham, and we're going down the Shoreham Road with the aid of oldfootballshirts.com. Well, last Saturday we came unstuck as Everton ended our unbeaten run. We also lost Anthony Knockhart to a rush of blood to the head, and he now has to sit out the next three games, including the one against his old club, Leicester. But he will also miss out on getting cup fever as we head into our first FA Cup quarter-final since 1986. We head to Old Trafford very much as the underdogs, but nobody expected Sevilla to win there on Tuesday either. And the pressure will definitely be more on Mourinho's Reds than us. Joining me today is, of course, Alan Wares, and we're delighted to welcome back the chief sports writer for the Brighton & Hove Independent. It's Steve Bailey. That is your job title.
That's correct. Yes, it is. Yep.
Finally, you got a job title right, AD. About time.
Oh, well.
We welcome the chief tea boy and bottle washer.
Well, he does. You do that as well, I think, don't you?
Yeah, I do everything.
Was it?
Yeah,
okay. Tea, what is your tea making whatever. Skills like?
It's all right.
Yeah?
How many people are in your department?
Well, in the sports department, there's seven of us. In the office in Worthing, we've got about 15 of us or so.
Oh, right, so you do actually have to make tea for other people.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I did wonder if it was going to be the old gag, how many people work here, or about half of them.
Yeah. But, and has the office got cup fever?
I think so, yeah. We've got to sit next to a United fan who's been giving him a bit of stickle week. I think he thinks it's going to be a relatively comfortable evening, but you just never know, do you?
Is it just my... my prejudices about Worthing may be that it's so typical that there's a Man United fan in your office. Or was that just my prejudices?
I think there's a lot more Albion fans around the county now than what there used to be.
Yeah,
certainly. I think, like, especially for stories we put online, we notice that in Eastbourne, Horsham, Worthing, they do particularly well.
Mm-hmm.
And you go out and around in Worthing now and you see more Albion shirts, but obviously you still see the United, Arsenal, Tottenham, Liverpool, etc.
I think that is very much the old school, though, isn't it? Because, I mean, what's happened is, of course, with Worthing, and we're going to be talking about them a little bit later on in another way, but we'll... it's very much Albion Central, and it always has been, and a hotbed of the Albion
You're
fan
talking about
base.
Worthing here?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But also, you've also, because of how expensive Brighton is to live in these days, it's also become a very transient place, and half of Brighton's moving across. And you've got that as well, and it's actually and these are actual
that
natural
said,
born Brightonians.
That said, that when you see on a Saturday morning, you do see a lot of West Ham, Arsenal, Spurs, whoever it is they're playing at home that day, shirts at Worthing or Lancing stations.
Again, so. And these are people generally
well,
move
station,
down though. So.
So
I mean, yeah, but you do get that. Yeah. But I mean, it's great.
I'm just sorry. I'm also loving the fact that the Brighton Hove Independent newspaper is done in Worthing. Yeah,
only the sport pages.
Oh, was it? Oh, okay. Yeah.
That's because it's independent of Brighton. Yeah.
Evidently, yes. It's not the People's Republic. It's they're the splitters. It's the independent.
So I mean, I'm still going to bring out my foil cup.
Are you?
And
yes,
yeah, I'm feeling it. I'm feeling this cup fever.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because, like I say, it's only the third time in the quarter final. You can't help feeling that, you know, there always seems to be at least one of the lower teams in each year. Well, Wigan seem to have been doing it several times, but there's always at least one of the lower teams that has a decent cup run. You know, Swansea are looking reasonable at the moment, and they're a bit sort of rubbish. Wigan had it sort of two or three years, and, you know, actually got around to winning the cup. It's not actually a major surprise that we're doing it. I'm just on back of the fact that we're a Premier League side now and again. And I think we forget that.
You know,
it's not a major thing. You know, we've beaten three lesser clubs of varying sort of grades of naffness. I mean, Coventry City, they were great. I mean, it was actually a really, really good day, that was. And for the most part, the Coventry fans were great. Middlesbrough was just a stinker of a game, but we managed to sort of, you know, thigh it in with a minute to go. And Crystal Palace is just a small club that no one likes.
Small clubs like Crystal Palace?
Yeah. Yep, we've got. For those that don't have super reverb vision, Steve Bailey nodded sagely there.
He did. Okay, well we're going to have a lot of cup fever on this show today because I mean it's a good thing to have.
Absolutely.
But let's start with the FA Cup in general because I mean there's a lot to talk about there and the proposed changes to that with them scrapping replays from the fifth round onwards and actually having the whole round played midweek next season.
The thing about having it without replays is one thing. I mean, because this sixth round is without replays. Fundamentally, I agree. I mean, it's Man United. I agree that it's wrong. Sorry, I'm agreeing with myself from when we mentioned this about 3 or 4 weeks ago that it's wrong. It shouldn't be that. And if Man United are in too many competitions, tough. Mm. That's their problem.
But Steve?
I agree. I think if you've got the lower league teams, it's so financially rewarding that they deserve their big day, don't they? If you draw, like Yeovil Man United earlier in the season, if that was a draw and Yeovil go to Old Trafford, imagine the money they're going to get in.
Absolutely. Or if the draw had been the other way around and they were away at Old Trafford. Yeah. And also, and the other way you've got to look at it as well, of course, and this was a fifth round tie. You've got the Rochdale Spurs game, and
Newport had that as well, didn't
they? Well, that was in the earlier round, but Newport got to have an away day at Wembley.
So did Rochdale. They've done really well out of it this season.
These are the sort of games that pay for their season.
Which in itself is actually kind of indicative of all that's wrong in football. Now, it's always been like it when it's Manchester, but one of my earliest sort of memories is Leeds United against Colchester United. Colchester were in the fourth division at the time. They had an ageing England centre forward in Ray Crawford playing for them. Leeds were the team to beat, and Colchester turned them over. They were 3-0 up at one point. They won 3-2, but the point is that the game was played at Layer Road, and they never got the financial rewards they needed, because if it was at Elland Road, one, there's a good chance that Leeds would have beaten them, more so, but they'd have actually had a real money spinner. But nowadays the gulf is so big and that the money required to compete is so vast that it's all the more vital. I mean, Newport have had a little bit of a jackpot. They beat Leeds, which is the cup money for that. They got to Wembley. They got some cup money for that. Great, good for them. But, let's have it spread around a little bit more evenly, generally.
Well, that's what needs to happen with the abolishment of the Premier League, in my opinion.
Well, another day.
So many cooks in the kitchen, but I mean, getting rid of the replays. I'm very much against it,
and especially midweek. I mean, that's look. What the other thing that's going to happen? I was sorry about hogging all this, but look, what have we got? We've got a kickoff this weekend at a midweek hour. In other words, 7:45. We've got a lot of people who can get up there but can't get back on public transport. The whole point is it's supposed to be the whole point of it being at the weekend is that you can get up there and back. Midweek, it's a different thing entirely. So we're talking about a competition where people aren't. If you're drawn with someone at the other end of the country, you're just not going to get there.
Steve, you're currently on your way up to Manchester.
Yes,
and
as we speak, just negotiating the roadworks on the M6.
But how do you feel about these 7:45. I mean, it's something that the Premier League want to do next season.
Yeah, I think there's one anyway. Later this season as well, isn't there? I think Spurs Man City. Mm. I think 7:45 on a Saturday next month, and it doesn't sit quite right. Going up to Manchester, if the fans can't get back on public transport, it doesn't sit right, does it? I know there's all the arguments Sky and BT put all this money in. They rule the roost. They can do what they want. But if it wasn't for the fans, what kind of spectacle is it? Mm. What if tomorrow, or today, sorry, 5,000 Brighton fans don't go up there. What if they all say, we're not going up there for a 7:45 kickoff? Mm. So you have 500 fans there. And what does that look like on telly?
Well, the whole point, part of what they're trying to achieve in terms of it, like you say, is a TV reality show, a TV spectacle, in as much as full stadia. But how are you going to achieve full stadia if you've got people that, they can get there but can't get back? I mean, that's the ridiculous part of it. I actually do have to say about this is that I've been asked this coming week to be the Albion fans representative for the Football Supporters Federation meeting with the Premier League this week. They have it twice a year. And I've noticed that one of the things on the agenda is about, not specifically about kickoff times. I think that's there. But it's also about the fact that when a match gets moved, and your train ticket is now no longer valid, can you have it that your train ticket can be valid for the time of the kickoff rather than the train that you've got?
That will never happen, though.
Well, the thing is that apparently they are talking to the Rail Delivery Group about it, but, the Rail Delivery Group, well, I mean, if there is a worse-named group in the country, then because what they don't do is deliver. But the point is that it's on the agenda. And this kind of thing, it would be fine if We could have the game at 7:45. I mean, you have this sort of thing in Spain. They'll have their games kicking off on a Saturday evening or a Sunday evening at 9 o'clock. But then they don't have the culture of the away fans going to those things.
They'll have maybe
we
ten.
Do.
I mean, yeah. You can have Barcelona playing away somewhere and sometimes they'll have 10 fans.
Well, no, Barcelona will attract the local things. But if you're talking about, I don't know, Malaga against Deportivo La Coruña, two ends of the country, they're just not going to do that. And like you say, they'll have 10, 15 fans. We in this country have a big culture of doing it. We could go to Newcastle, the other end of the country, we'll have 3,000 fans. It's unique across Europe. Maybe Germany, maybe Italy. No, not even Italy, maybe France. But here, we travel in our numbers. And therefore, the whole notion of actually having... If you're going to do this, then make sure you've got the public transport infrastructure in place. And if it can't be there, it's not going to work.
I think you also got to praise the Brighton fans who are going up there tomorrow for the 5,000 fans going up there for a 7:45 kickoff on a...
Today, Steve.
Today, sorry. And also with the ticket prices as well, because obviously in the Premier League you've got £30 tops for away fans.
Yes.
And
that was going to be my next point, actually.
How much are the tickets then?
£37.50 to £45.
Some of them are upwards of £40.
Yeah. Plus you've also got the fact that it's forecast for ice and snow. Now, there's not a great deal you can do about that, but everyone has to drive. Hardly anyone's, apart from those that are staying up there, you know, the trains are a no-no, so forget
it. Ice, snow, rain in Manchester. Who'd have thought it?
No, but it's also down here as well, so, okay. You know.
But one game that did kick off on a Saturday at 3 o'clock was last week, and that was, of course, the Everton game. There was an enforced change to the side, which basically meant we weren't going in with an unchanged team for the fourth game in a row. And if one player enhanced their reputation by not playing, it was Dale Stevens.
How long have I been banging his drum?
Yeah, Steve?
Well, I think everyone's talked about all the signings Brighton made last summer and their effectiveness, Gross, Proper, Iscariado. Do you think Stevens was the best piece of business that Brighton did last summer? Because I think you only realise his value to the team when he doesn't play. He keeps the ball.
Absolutely.
Wins the ball.
I think the better piece of business was this previous summer to that when Tony Bloom said no. I mean... then getting him in on a four-year contract, which is probably a lot easier to do once we got to the Premier League. Fine. But before that, that was the, you know, the Burnley chairman tried to have a game of poker with Tony Bloom.
Well, he put his cards on his table and he lost.
He lost. He put Tony Bloom put 8 million, whatever Burnley were offering, he put 8 million quid on the table for the sake of right. Because without Dale Stevens, I will say this, I mean, it's subjective, absolutely. But without Dale Stevens, I'm convinced we wouldn't have got to the Premier League. So that 8 million quid is a hell of an investment for the 150 million we've got back.
I mean, I'm not necessarily agreeing with that, but I mean, he was a very, very important cog in that team, and that the team that got us promoted, and the team now, the emphasis is very much on team, which we're going to touch on in a minute. But it was... we just never got going, did we?
No, you saw Everton just didn't keep the ball, didn't overly look like scoring. I think Murray's shot in the first half was, I think, the only effort of note in the first half until the last... I know Brighton started the second half OK, but up until the last probably 5 minutes after Knockout got sent off, there wasn't really anything.
I'm actually prepared to give Everton and Aladici some credit here because, I mean...
Aladici?
Well, that's what
Why have you called him that?
That's what he wants to be called. So, you know...
I call him a few things.
Yeah. Have you not, you must have heard that story. He said that if his name was Aladici, he would have been had a top job by now.
Yeah, but he's not, so that's why he doesn't. So,
all right. Well, he can roll the dice then, can't he? The Aladice. Moving on. I'm prepared to give him some credit because if you watched our previous games, including the Arsenal ones and the team and the games where we have been successful. And I mentioned it on the show a few weeks ago. Well, continuously, really, but. Jose Escuerdo has become the metronome for how we actually play, and getting the ball wide to him or to Knockaert, it's been very, very crucial to. And if we're not getting, and they stopped that supply line, he had to come looking for the ball. Knockaert was getting his knickers in a twist all game.
Yeah, but why didn't that happen? Why didn't it happen? Because Dale Stevens wasn't playing. I mean, it sounds as though therefore you're criticising Kyle, but as much as you say Escuerdo is, I think that in that case Stevens is the heartbeat of the team. On account of the fact that midfield, he knows exactly where to be at a given time, and you know, And if Kyle happens to be 3 or 4 yards away, or Proper, you know, is feeding off him. I mean, Stevens and Proper feed off each other the way that Stevens and Kyle did a couple of years ago. They feed off each other. And if, you know, you've got an actually major part missing and the rest of them try to make up for it. I mean, I say it does sound like you're criticising Kyle because he's the direct replacement. But Stevens is that good he knows exactly where to be.
Just play devil's advocate then, Steve. If the injury was the other way around and it was Proper missing, I don't think we would have had that problem. But I think there is a case that Proper and Kyle haven't actually had that chance to make it have a relationship in the first team and to bond. Okay, yeah, you train together, etc. But that's no substitute for playing games, is it?
No, I think that's right. Kyle and Stevens obviously had the long partnership in the Championship, used to playing with each other, know exactly where each other is going to be. Also, I think Stevens and Proper, they're both so hard working that I'd say Stevens is the more of the ball winner out of the two. He'll win more tackles. Whereas Proper, as hard as he works, I don't see him winning quite as many tackles.
He's more of a number 10, really, isn't he?
Yeah. But he's done a great job for the team this season, especially when you consider where he plays for the Netherlands.
He plays quite deep compared to Payne in Holland, yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I said on the show last week when we were about how we were playing against Arsenal, and I said we were hungrier than Arsenal. We wanted it more than Arsenal.
Oh, Everton
against
were
Everton,
very much for
Everton
that, yeah.
were hungry for
Absolutely.
The ball. And they were first at every second ball. And, you know, I mean...
Well, if you're going to take that food allegory, then I'd say we gorged ourselves the previous week and we were running around like fat blokes, said the fat bloke.
I think Everton also had arguably their strongest defensive lineup of the season that day, with Coleman and Baines, their two established Premier League fullbacks, probably two of the best in the league.
Yeah.
And, you know, you talk about this crowd being quiet. A big part of that, again, was Coleman playing. If it had been Holgate or Kenny, would they have had the same impact in stopping him? I'm not so sure.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at that Everton team now, and you've got the former England captain, you've got the player who last scored an England hat-trick in Theo Walcott, you've got Gylfi Sigurdsson, who's one of the world's most cultured players, shall we say.
Agricultural horticulture?
Gylfi Sigurdsson is a wonderful player, and I would like to have him on our team. You've got
that team is not as good as the sum of its parts. So that team should be so much better.
Mm. Yeah, it should be, and they will be when they get a new manager next year.
Yeah.
But the talk is that
Arteta's
going to go in there, isn't it? But which could be interesting.
No, but the point about it is that we looked. It was very much our. Very much a case of after the Lord Mayor's show. We were brilliant against Arsenal and we were equally rubbish in equal and opposite measure against Everton. We couldn't keep the ball. They just, I mean, as Steve said, they weren't brilliant in the first half. And, you know, to be honest, all pretty much the vast majority of the game was a forgettable dirge.
Everton had chances and they will be wondering how they went in at 0-0. But we also had a very presentable chance, which, as you mentioned earlier, fell to Glenn Murray, who forced Pickford into...
Well, he says presentable. I think it was more opportunistic. I mean, it was just, you know, all right, I've got a sight of goal. I'm going to give it a whack, see what happens. You know, especially as that bloke's confidence must be flying at the moment.
Yeah. He will be. But, I mean, Everton did take the lead and it was down to Knockaert losing the ball, basically.
It started with that.
Yeah, and then I think Blassi cut inside too easily. There was no one really closed him down. Ball to the back post. You know,
Bong was asleep.
Yeah, Bong was asleep. Walcott got round the back and I know the ball went in off Bong in the end, but it was just a goal that's unlike Brighton to concede.
Mm.
It was just
sloppy,
too easy.
Fell asleep.
Yeah. And then Matty Ryan said afterwards, he said it's a cardinal sin to allow a player on the left to cut in on his right foot and cross it to the back post. I mean, there was just no pressure on him, was there, Blassi?
No. Blassi, for the previous 20 minutes, had been having a stinker. I mean, some of his crossing was appalling. He had a decent first half, and to be honest, he gave Scilotto the runaround in the first half. Scilotto had a poor game, in my opinion. And in fact, I think the only people that had a reasonable game was sort of the spine, of which I mean Duffy and Dunk, Proper and Murray. The rest of them, you know, on the flanks were not good. And so, yeah, Scilotto was being given the runaround. But like I say, in the second half, Blassi went off the boil. But as soon as he was given this perfect opportunity to float this cross in, without being closed down. But your point about Knockhart giving the ball away, it was just so sloppy. It was so careless. It was, you know, it was a good opportunity for a breakaway. You know, the part, you could see the pass was on, and you could see it so well. So could Everton, and he telegraphed it. He telegraphed it from miles out, and it was so easily cut out. And it's so frustrating that the given choices at a certain moment just fall down.
Okay, now here's where it gets interesting.
Because there's nothing else about that game was interesting.
Chris Hughton made a substitution before the 70th minute. It was amazing. And it took off Kyle, and he put on Lucardia. And so we went more of a, basically it was 4-4-2 with Gross in the middle. And Lucardia could have scored with his first touch.
Yes, well, I think it took a touch and it was closed down, wasn't it?
Yeah. Now, I mean, we're not going to go through all the right whys and wherefores in this game like we normally do, but I thought it was interesting watching Gross playing a little bit deeper there, and I think maybe something we could do later on in the season, perhaps.
Definitely. I think, you know, you look at his quality, his eye for a through ball. I think when he talks post game, you talk to him about his assists and goals, and he always likes to point out the second to last pass as well. Like you look at his link-up play with Izquierdo. I think the second goal against Swansea, where I think it was Gross to Izquierdo to Murray in the goal. And you know that eye for a pass. I think that would be beneficial.
Well, there was that terrific quote from Glenn Murray this week, wasn't there? And when he was asked the question, "What do you attribute your success to this season?" He says, "Pascal Gross."
We mentioned it again to Dion Dublin, didn't he? He says the spine lines is Pascal Gross. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, his passing when it's right is absolutely exquisite. Yeah. When it's wrong, it's horrible. But
okay. Well, Cenk Tosun made it 2-0 for the Toffees.
Good finish.
I think that ball might have been going. I was watching it last night. I was trying to work out. It did get a deflection. It looked like the ball was deflected goalwards, and it may have been going slightly wide when I was looking at that.
Well. But, ask Gordon Smith, he set that rule.
Yeah. But it was. But then we tried to score from the restart. So, that was. Yeah.
That was funny, that was. I mean,
it wasn't far off, actually.
No, it wasn't far off at all.
Yeah. I would have laughed.
Yes, carry on.
But, okay. And then Knockhart gets the ball in the face.
I think you could, even in the first half, you could see he was frustrated. Everything he was trying, it wasn't quite coming off. It was one of those days for him. And I remember saying to my colleague there just before half time, I said, would you take him off at half-time or give him a bit longer? We thought that it'd be one of those subs where Solly comes on for him after about an hour.
He was about to come on. That's the ironic thing.
Was he warmed up and ready to come on? Yeah. Right.
But
It was the ball just hit him in the face, wasn't it? It's not as though someone belted at him.
It was an accidental
thing. Absolutely.
But he got the red mist about it. Now, where myself and Steve were sitting,
Where were you sitting in comparison to it?
We were on the other side. So.
Okay, so you're in the stand that's opposite the camera.
So we were in the press box in the Brighton fence. So basically, we were looking at the incident from behind.
Right.
And from where we were sitting, it didn't look like there was anything wrong there at all.
I'll tell you what it was. If you didn't have the TV screens in, because when you're in the press box, we all three can say this, but I'll say this to the people. When you're in the press box, the vast majority of places, and you were saying it wasn't that, they have these replay screens that you don't necessarily get to see on the big stadium replay, and you'll get to see the contentious moments, the offsides, the red, blah, blah, blah.
We didn't have them.
You're saying you didn't have that. If you had done, you'd have probably seen. But the thing is, what possibly did for you was the fact that Leighton Baines didn't go down screaming and crying. He actually was very professional. He just looked at the ref as if to say, what was all that about? Just let the ref get on with the game. Give the correct red card. But, I mean, in that sense, you don't want to have to credit Leighton Baines with this because he didn't, you know, really properly touch him. But you know that there'll be some players who'll be just, you know, yes, Knockhart did something stupid, but the overreaction's not necessary. Leighton Baines did no such thing. So that's possibly where, you know... Yeah. Yeah. You didn't necessarily see the intent of the two-footed jump.
No, because
you didn't see the reaction.
From behind, you couldn't see it. And you saw that Baines just jumped out of the way. And you just thought, oh, well, that's a throw-in. And then the next thing, you know, you see the red cards going up. Everyone's craning then next to have a look at the screen to find out what's going on. But it was,
I'll tell you the point.
We know that Anthony was stupid. We know that he got the red mist. We know he's been up and down this season.
Mostly down, I'm afraid to say.
Well, but people have got very short memories. He's been given a lot of pelters saying that he should never play for the club. What are you talking
about? No, that's stupid.
This guy, he was the best player last season. Helped that he was integral in getting his promoted.
In itself isn't necessary reason enough, but the point is that he is still good enough to play in this top division.
He is
probably too good for the Championship. He's in that kind of hinterland between where he hasn't actually settled into the Premier League yet. Once he's got his head down it's not the skill that's the issue, it's the decision making. And once he can actually get that and realise that actually it's not necessarily about him, I don't know, maybe he does think that, I'm not sure, but you get to realise that when you see him playing, he wants to do that one trick too many. And actually, in the Premier League, you don't need that. You'd rather be effective. You can be a show pony later. Get the cross in. Get the right thing in. Get the shot on target. You don't have to have the champagne moment every time.
See,
he has that within him.
Steve, he has, on occasion, he has actually done it and played it simple, and it's been effective.
Absolutely. He's got the quality. There's no doubt about that. Sometimes it's just a bit too much. He won't do the easy ball. He'll try and take on one player too many. But when he does it right, you know, his quality, he was Championship Player of the Season last year. Standout player by a long way. And I also think that he's the type of character who he'd have instantly regretted what he'd have done. And hopefully come the last, six league games when he's available, I think he'll come back with a point to prove, to say, I let you down, I know I let you down, but I'm going to show you my worth now for the rest of the season.
Well, we know he's got issues with with his family side of things.
Well, he has had. We don't know the extent to which that affects his professional life. Somewhere down, bearing in mind that Chris Hughton gets to see him week in, week out, day in, day out, he'll understand and appreciate if there's any sort of issues that are going on. Evidently not if he's going to get picked. This is a fellow that wants to do well, and when he isn't, you know that it's actually a very stupid, unprofessional thing to have done. And if there is an upside to it, it's probably because of the fact it was in a game that was already gone and there was no further damage, thanks to the keeper, which we'll talk about in a minute. And, if it was in the 10th minute of a game that was so, so vital and we'd have lost him for 80 minutes and lost on the back of that, then fair enough. But it was a game where, thankfully, no further damage was done.
Okay.
Yeah, so you're kind of forgiving him a bit.
The only problem is that he's now suspended for Leicester and Huddersfield, which you look at the remaining games on paper and you probably say they're the most winnable.
Yes.
Definitely at home.
Mm-hmm.
And even if he wasn't going to start those games, to have that option...
Okay.
It'd have been good.
Well,
yeah.
let's go off topic on that then, because it presents another player who's not necessarily been in the squad with an opportunity. Now, I don't know who that's going to be, but you look at the development squad and you're seeing the like of Gokores and you're seeing Bordell in there.
I'm thinking James Tilley, actually. If it's going to be anyone from the under-23 squad, from the development squad, the most logical person for me is James Tilley. He's a wide player. I don't know if he's an out-and-out winger, but he's a wide player. Or it could be that Houghton's just happy with what he's got at the moment and will shuffle the pack accordingly.
Could be Baldock. When Houghton first came in, Baldock was playing left, more of a left-sided role.
He's not an out-and-out winger, though, is he?
No, he's not.
I think Houghton's got enough options in the first team squad.
I would like to see one of the development squad players get given the opportunity.
Because
they're not necessarily going to start.
Mm.
Gokores, for instance, he's actually tearing it up at the moment.
Mm.
And he's looking like he could be one that could be fast-tracked.
If they're going to have that option at all, it's more likely to be in the cup game.
Yeah, sure.
Rather than the league game.
Okay, well, let's just, before we move on, let's just quickly talk about the penalty. I mentioned to the chap I was sitting next to, actually, I've got to tell you his job. I'm in the wrong job, right?
What's his job?
This guy, his entire job was to sit there, and he had a spreadsheet in front of him, and he was writing down when the Everton fans started singing and when they stopped, and when the Albion fans started singing and they stopped. And there was a list of...
To what end?
It was all for Opta.
Good grief.
I know. And the Brighton list was onto the second page. The Everton didn't even get halfway down the first one. But
watching the game on BN Sports, whatever it's called, I must admit there was a very, very good rendition of Sussex by the Sea.
Yeah. But anyway, so I was chatting to this fella. And when Calvert-Lewin came in, I go, oh, well, here comes McCheaty face. And he was like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, and then he goes and falls over. I mean, yes, he does. It probably was a penalty, but he is so lightweight, isn't he? And he went the penalty against
Bruno, is it?
Yeah.
Bruno. Yeah. Well, to be honest, that was a forearm smash, but you know. But the one against, what was it, Shane Duffy?
Shane Duffy, yeah.
You know me, I don't believe in the concept of a soft penalty. Either it was or it wasn't, and for me it wasn't.
I don't think it was a penalty.
Yeah. There you go. And
Matt Ryan saved, and Rooney's now got the record of, he's equaled Alan Shearer's record for the most penalties missed.
Yeah, seven penalties he's had this season, and he's missed four. Although one of the ones he didn't miss was obviously down at our place.
Okay, well, let's leave that one there. And you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com on DAB, and, of course, on our podcast. We are proud as ever to be brought to you in association with the fantastic oldfootballshirts.com, who've had another milestone this week.
86,000 shirts.
Which is absolutely amazing.
You sad
amazing.
People.
And I'm just going to hand over what Phil's given to you for this week's Shirt of the Week.
Okay, we'll just say that the Shirt of the Week is something that Phil picks off the off the website, hands it to us. We've got to guess what I can see from here what that is straight away. It's pink and dark blue quarters. This is Dulwich Hamlet, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
He picks a shirt from the website and often bamboozles AD with some foreign gibberish. So bear in mind this is South East London. I think he's probably
I'm not going to do the accent.
Don't. Okay.
So here is your Shirt of the Week, and it's a little bit topical. This is the 2012-13 home shirt of the Ispingham Premier League side Dulwich Hamlet. The Hamlet were formed in 1893 and up until this week played their home games at Champion Hill Stadium, capacity 3,000. The stadium was built by King's College London in the early 90s and it was rented to the club. And in 2014, the ground was sold to Meadow Residential, an apparently benevolent property development company who continued to rent the ground to the football club.
Oh, chinny raccoon.
This seems to have ended badly, with Meadow making a number of accusations about the club and evicting them last week. The club have countered their claims and have sought to ground share with local rivals Tooting and Mitcham. It looks like this will get a lot more messy before it's resolved, with quite unpleasant and forthright claims and counterclaims going on. Anyway, a few lighter notes about this enigmatic club. They are the longest-standing members of the Ispian League, having joined in 1907 and having won the title four times, and the Amateur FA Cup four times also. Former player Edgar Isaac Lewis Kyle played over 450 times for the side, and he was the last non-league player to win a full England international cap. He won three in total, including scoring twice in his debut. Who can guess what year that was and who it was against?
I am going to guess, if it was a non-league player, then I would say 1911.
1929, close. And it was against France. There you go.
I'll tell you what, then, in that case, I'm going to slam brakes on there. It's a high possibility. I need to double check this. It's a possibility that that was at the Goldstone Ground. I'll double check that.
Okay. A few past players went on to higher things. Andy Gray, Peter Crouch, Jimmy Glass, to name just three. And as for Albion links, former left-back Gentleman Jim Langley managed the Hamlet in 1977. He turned out 180 times for the Albion in the mid-50s. Andy Anser made 25 appearances for the Albion between 97 and 99 before finishing his career at Dulwich. And John Humphrey, pretty much the same, 20 games with us before moving to Champion Hill. And if you want a fully tentative link, another former manager, Alan Batsford, who was the manager of Walton and Hersham in the Donkeys against Thoroughbred game in 1973. Yes, the FA Cup tie when Brian Clough's BHAFC were beaten by the non-league side. So thanks for that, Phil.
And I've got to say, as we're going out on air now, it's roughly 12:30. They are actually meeting to march on Champion Hill before their game against
Worthing.
No, they're playing Worthing on Sunday. They've moved that game to Sunday, but they're actually marching in Dulwich as we speak And I suspect, I think they've had a couple of heavyweight politicians have come in and helped them this week as well, so with their pink and blue scarves. So we offer solidarity to Dulwich Hamlet. The parallels between what's happening there and what happened to us 22 years ago are quite stark. So good luck to them, and we wish them all the best in their future endeavours.
OK, so anyway, so today we are in the FA Cup final. It's the first time
the
that
what?
We've in the FA Cup quarter final. what did I say?
Final.
Oh, yeah, we are in the FA Cup final. Yay, we've done it.
Yeah.
He says putting his crystal ball away, crystal ball. And it's the first time since we've played there since 1986. Now, the manager of that game in 86 was one Chris Catlin. And a few years ago, myself and Al had Cats on the show, didn't we?
We did. We've raided the archives and... Well, we started off by asking him who his worst player was, who played in that game. And he, in no uncertain terms, well, Richie Parker asking the question, in no uncertain terms, he told us who it was.
OK, Chris, then who was your worst signing? Come on, name the turkeys.
The worst signing, I would think, I needed a centre-forward, had no money, and Mick Ferguson had scored... Hang on a minute, he scored... hang on a minute, I shouldn't be saying this.
Let me tell you.
I spoke to various people, Bobby Gould and a few more, and the season before he joined the Albion, he scored 9 goals in 13 games at the highest level for Coventry. Think about that, 9 in 13. Mm. Lacked mobility. He come down, he's the greatest disappointment of my life. Mm. Greatest disappointment. And no matter what, I thumped him, did anything with him, you couldn't get him to move. And he just lost his appetite for life and the game. I don't know, he got personal problems. Off the field, I do not know, but he just never played like the Mick Ferguson who I knew he wasn't going to chase all over the pitch. He was getting long in the tooth for that. But what I do, I got players who can get crosses and he can get in the box. And we had Terry Connor and Dean Saunders and people like that who would score goals off Ferguson's heading ability. Mm. But you couldn't get the Daily Mirror under his feet.
So what do you do with a player like that? If you can't get through to him, do you just leave him in the reserves to sort of sort himself out? Or?
No, you can't do that. He's on wages and you've got to, you know, either put your arm around him, try to get solve his problems and talk to him. But he was long in the tooth and he was a great disappointment to me. I hate it when a player... If a player can't play, I can accept that. But if a player has ability and doesn't do it, that really gets to me, and I'm not happy at all with that. Mm.
I think the one that sewed it up for me was the cup quarter final against Southampton.
Yeah.
We lost 2-0.
2-0. Glenn Crockham scored twice.
I hated him.
I know.
But yeah. I do remember. Well, I mean, when I sort of did the reaction when he said Mick Ferguson, I just remember that was a game where I thought, oh come on, you know. I think a couple of times the ball was laid on a plate for him, and it'd have been easier to score than to miss, and
you could see it in his face, dank look on his face, not an healthy look on his face, and but I had nobody else to play,
right? Mm.
You know, I mean, that's the only player I got. And I couldn't buy anybody because I had no money, so you're trapped. It's a little bit.
Now, Chris, it is FA Cup weekend this weekend, so as a manager, what would you say your favourite FA Cup moment would be?
My favourite FA Cup
was a manager or a player?
Watching as a young boy, Blackpool and Bolton, my dad sat out. That was, what a game that. I really.
The 53 Cup final was
about. It's fantastic. Absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Throughout the years, there have been many, I think Ronnie Radford's goal for Hereford. It was match of the day and Michael Parkinson after I don't think I went out for 10 years on a Saturday night.
Black and white minstrel show. And
never went out. I used to love it. I couldn't wait. The FA Cup was so much. We used to go to a special hotel in Huddersfield when Huddersfield were playing. We played Chelsea and the actual atmosphere of the Cup. There's nothing like the Cup. Mm. It was fantastic. Absolutely. And you used to go around the radio on a Monday and listen for the draw. Oh, my father was there and everything.
These austere gentlemen with the velvet bag. None of this glitz and glamour nowadays.
Absolutely fantastic.
Now, what about as a manager?
As a manager, when we drew Liverpool in the Cup, and I'd seen Liverpool play, and I just thought we could peg Neil and Kennedy back with Neil Smalley and Stephen Penny. I thought if we get at them and get running at them and knock them backwards.
This is the home game, the 1-2-0.
Yeah, the home game on a Sunday at the Goldstone,
And it was on TV as well, wasn't it?
It was on TV,
I was there.
It was great. And sometimes it's nice when you're a manager, when you get your tactics right for once. Instead of sitting back and trying to get them on the break with Jerry Ryan and Stephen Connor, I thought I'm going to go at this lot.
Terry Connor.
we're going to go at this. So we went at them and caused them all kinds of problem. Anson and Lawrenson and Grobbelaar.
Souness got substituted after about the first 10 minutes. I think he just
Grealish whacked him.
I just quite said right, it's either, was that part of your tactics?
No, it's either him or you. You know, you can't, when you play against somebody, you can't have a good day.
Yeah.
It was either Tony Grealish or Graham Souness.
Right.
And I said this to Grealish, and Grealish responded
the first 5 minutes, appropriately. Maiming
appropriately.
Him.
Appropriately. Yeah,
so just, that must have been you could get away with a lot more in those days.
Well, you could, but so did Graham Souness. There was nobody.
That was, of course, Chris Catlin talking
that was
on
one of my favourite shows of all time.
That was on the Albion Raw, but 8 years ago.
It was
amazingly.
January 2010. No, I'd love to have him back. You know, he was so good. Like I say, he was the last manager to get to the Cup quarter final. And that game against Southampton, I think we have different opinions on that. I thought we were dreadful that day. It was a packed Goldstone, really, really squashed in the North Stand, 26,000 there, and we were just so poor.
Yeah, it was a great team though. I mean, we had, you know, Dick Weedwin. Goal, Chris Hutchins, Graham Pearce, who played in the Cup Final,
yeah.
Steve Penny, Steve Jacobs, Dean Saunders, Terry Connor, Dennis Mortimer.
Yeah.
What a team. Jimmy Case playing for
Southampton, yeah.
Southampton.
Shouldn't have left here.
They had Peter Shilton in goal. They had David Armstrong, Christ, I remember him. Danny Wallace was playing.
They had a decent side.
Do you still hate Glenn Cockerell?
Yeah, I
do.
Silly mullet.
Yeah, but I remember that
is
game.
Is this all before your time, Steve? Do you remember this?
Yeah. I went to my first Brighton game in 1989.
No, we're talking about 84 here and 86 for the cup game.
But I remember that game so clearly, and it was my favourite Albion kit of all time, which was the Phoenix Brewery.
Okay, yeah. With the horizontal stripes across the shoulders? Yeah, that was a nice one.
I absolutely adore that kit.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, it was a simpler time. Chris Catlin was my favourite Albion manager of all time, probably still is, even now.
In terms of not what his quality or just the fact he's such a top chap?
Because I was 15 and I went, it was a simpler time.
Salad days.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was back these days, if you're going to go to, if you want to go to the game, you've got to plan it, you've got to try and get a ticket in advance.
I've told this before many, many times. There was one time when the pitch needed clearing of snow. And again, I was probably 15, 16, something like that. And it must have been during the Christmas holiday or something. And I think it was Frankie Howard was the head groundsman, and he just asked people to come in. There's no way you'd have it now. Ask people to come along with their shovels to clear the pitch of snow, and there must have been about 50 people turned up. And Chris Catlin made tea for absolutely everyone. It was brilliant. It's just those kind of things. I suppose that kind of heart and soul that you have that I'd always associate with Chris Hughton today. Whereas, you know, if the same thing was done, Chris Hughton would probably do exactly the same thing, make tea for everyone. Catlin did that. And in that sense, you know, those two are kind of peas in a pod for me.
Right. Okay, well, it's St. Patrick's Day coming up. We're going to come on and talk about our favourite Irish players.
It's
shortly,
not coming up, it's today.
But firstly, we've got a bit of notice board for you. So I'm going to start with this one. You just heard from Richie there. Richie was one of the original presenters of the Albion Raw back in the day. And the sixth Albion Raw Down Under is now available
as a podcast, yep.
Where they talk about, Steve will be miserable probably.
Yes, Steve generally is. Not you, Mr. Bailey. Steve, who runs Seagulls Down Under, who's going to listen to this and he's going to then write to us and say, I'm not unhappy, moan. But well, no, do listen to the podcast. I mean, Steve has got an enormous organisation going on, Seagulls Down Under. And that, like I say, they're good enough to organise their own podcast down there. They've got this week a presenter from Fox Sports in Australia. And it's a great show. So do listen. It's on Audio Boom on our channel, and just download that and have a good listen and a good giggle.
Okay, and Al, we've got Renth season coming up. We're going to start with a Renth game, which is not the first thing coming
up. No, but it's Friday the 11th of May at the Dripping Pan, Brighton fans against Palace fans. I believe as we speak, Brett Mendoza is sorting out his team and insisting that everyone pays their way. It's a fiver to get in. All proceeds go to the Robert Eaton Memorial Fund. Brighton are the current holders and wish for that to remain so. Are you going to come along to that, Steve?
I'll try and get along if I can.
Yep. It's the weekend of the Liverpool away game, the last game of the season. So, but it's a couple of days before that. So,
But before the Renth game is the Renth quiz, Al.
Renth quiz on Thursday, the 29th of March, in the Heineken Lounge at the American Express Stadium. AD,
Yeah, well, basically, our, I mean, the Renth quiz, it's always good. And if you want to get a team together...
You've won it before.
I have won it before. I've been banned from the team now, though, so it kind of...
Are you going to come to that?
Yeah, we did it. Did it came along with my team a couple of years ago. We didn't do very well, so...
I'm still hoping to get
well,
back.
Well, you two sort out a team between you, then.
Maybe we will.
Absolutely. But you can, I mean, you'd be the Worthing Independent.
The But the one round where people always get questions
can
wrong...
Can I just say that I'm actually about to ask five questions here. No, I've let these guys know what the questions are. But yes, these are as hard as the questions get. So if you think, oh, I'm not coming to this quiz because it's really hard, everything else is easier. So question one, and I always do a round about the Albion. Question one, who played the pass through for Will Buckley to score the winning goal against Doncaster Rovers in the first league game against Amex? AD, your arm is waving around like a lunatic.
Craig Noon.
It is Craig Noon. Number two, in Chris Hughton's first game for Spurs against Brighton in 79, which future Brighton player played for Spurs that day?
Shivers.
Martin Shivers. Mm. No. Without having too much dead air?
Without having too much dead air. I do know this because I probably answered. I was probably there.
I've done this as a question before. The answer is Jerry Armstrong. In Chris Hughton's last game for West Ham against Brighton in 1992, which future Brighton player was playing for West Ham that day?
George Parris.
Point to Steve. AD, your wait. No. Did you get that?
I'm bowing to his superior knowledge.
Number four, if Brighton are considered to be the reigning Division 3 South champions, who are the reigning Division 3 North champions?
Stockport County.
Is that your guess? Steve, pick one of those places.
Chesterfield.
No, the answer is Scunthorpe. But like I say, that's as hard as those questions get. And number five, which former Brighton player plays a voiceover in the Shrek movies?
Isn't it Michael Robinson?
It is Michael Robinson in Spanish. Absolutely. Do you remember that from when I asked it before then?
No, it just hit me. I'm full of uses.
I couldn't tell you which character it was. Something tells me it was one of the princesses or something. But yes, it was Michael Robinson who did it for the Spanish version of Shrek.
Okay. Well, over on our Facebook page, you can come along and join the fun. There's always various things going on there. But this week, one of the questions, because it's St. Patrick's Day today... I've asked the question of who's your favourite all-time...
And let's face it,
not necessarily best ones.
Marcus Hancock's went through the entire list as best he could. Thanks, Marcus. Not quite entering into the spirit of it. But
we've had so many responses on this.
Sure. I mean, Steve, anyone sort of spring to mind for Irish players that have excelled for the Albion?
I'll say John Byrne. He was probably one of the strikers when I first started going regularly, like early 90s. Yeah, he was one of my favourite players at the time. He obviously came back again, didn't he, for a brief spell. Other than that, you look at nowadays, I mean, Shane Duffy, he's got to be right up there. Paul McShane for that goal at Palace. Stephen Ward was all right, wasn't he, when he was here?
And of the current crop, I think even now, and he is our player still, is Ollie Norwood still underrated, I think, for me, so...
Well, yeah, he hasn't made my team. I have come up with a team. But,
okay,
I mean,
go on then. Far away. Let's see.
I'm just going through this list. We'll go through some of these names in a bit that I've missed out from the team. But the one problem area I had, I can't see anyone that has named a goalkeeper, so I've had to go with Wayne Henderson.
Is that really as good as we've got?
I can't think of another Irish goalkeeper. So answers on a postcard if you can think of another.
There might have been one way back in the black and white days, but who knows?
But I mean, fullbacks. I've gone for.
Have you got a manager as well?
I have got a manager. Okay, well, that kind of names itself, though, doesn't it?
Well, no, could be one of three.
I can't think of another Irish manager than Brady,
Hughton,
of course,
Charlie Webb.
These.
Yeah. Oh, Ady, your jaw has hit the floor for the first time ever, folks. Ady's jaw has hit the floor.
They're about as Irish as Mark Lawrenson.
Yeah, I know. Hence mentioning John Byrne as well, but I cannot believe that. Sorry, and I'm not editing that out. I'm really not.
No, that's fine.
Okay,
so fullbacks. I've gone for Ward and Sammy Nelson.
Okay.
Centre backs. Now, we've had a few of those over the years. I mean, you mentioned Paul McShane. You could have Mark Lawrenson playing there. You could have. Obviously, I've gone for Paul McCarthy because, I mean, who's sadly now
passed away,
too young.
Yeah.
Very grown up, you know, he's one of those players that we used to really enjoy watching. And of course, I've got to go for the current incumbent as well, which is Shane Duffy.
Okay, fine, yeah. I think McCarthy's a decent pairing.
Now, midfield, who would you go for?
I would actually go for Lawrenson and Grealish together. I mean, you've got Grealish the enforcer and Lawrenson the ballet dancer, as Andy Rollings would have called him.
I haven't actually put Mark Lawrence in this team, but if you want...
What?
Because, well, you know... What?
Hello,
We talked enough about Mark Lawrence last week.
Yeah, but hang on, was he not arguably the greatest ever Brighton player?
Yes.
Hashtag TM.
Yeah, trademark. Yes. Yeah. But no, I mean, and if you want to listen to of course, the Mark Lawrence interview, you can catch up on our archive, as well as the Chris Catlin one.
Yeah,
there, as
absent
well.
From your team. I'm appalled, AD.
Who else
is in midfield then, mate?
I went for Danny Wilson and Tony Grealish.
Danny Wilson's a good shout, but when you got Lawrenson, then, you know, I said, yeah.
I've left out Lawrenson to put McCarthy in for sentimental reasons.
Hey, all right. Now, I can guess one of your wingers, certainly. His all-time favourite player is?
Steve Penny.
Yeah, and who's on the other wing?
I have gone for there's lots of players. What other
Spit
wingers
it out.
Do we have?
I'm actually sure of them.
I just wrote this down in 5 minutes. And go on. There are worse than I thought.
Anyone else you can think about an Irish player on the wing?
Not off the top of my head.
Who have you gone for then?
A guy who had oodles and oodles of talent.
What?
But never showed it. Paddy McCourt.
He wasn't really a winger, though, was he?
Well, yeah, kind of.
It was kind of more, if anything, more played the Pascal Gross type role now, didn't they? But
yeah, I could see that. But I mean, who else is there?
Well, people tell us your favourite 11. Yeah. Would you have stuck Paddy McCourt in the wide player?
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's just go through them. Strikers, I've got who have you gone for? You would go for John Byrne, obviously.
I think Budgie Byrne's a good shout.
Okay.
Just because, not for us, but he was probably one of the greatest Irish players ever. I'd say Frank Stapleton.
Okay. I've gone for another Irish player, strangely. I've gone for the Irishman who possibly scored their most famous and greatest goals. Gerry Armstrong.
Yeah. Okay. And we've also who else have we? If you only got one sub,
Jerry Ryan.
But
you could have
understood.
Gary Dicker, you could have Kieran O'Regan, you could have all sorts of
Gary
people.
Howlett. Absolutely.
Gary Howlett. I mean, we've had a rich vein of Irish players over the years.
Absolutely.
And I mean, there's a lot of that bring back a lot of happy memories, particularly Steve Penny, obviously.
If you want to listen back to Chris Catlin, he talks about what he feels about Steve Penny as well. Well, I'm going to tell you, he flattered to deceive was his phrase. So as much as he's your favourite player, he felt that he didn't actually achieve what he could have done. So, you know.
There's so much stuff in our archives now. So
Absolutely.
Much. Go and have a look.
Just the 9.5 years worth.
Okay, well, Man United today then in the FA Cup. And
just say that Steve has just made it past the M6 and he's now onto the...
On the final stretch.
Carry on.
But, I mean, Steve, we've been to Old Trafford already once this season. One of our greatest away performances of the season as well. Unfortunately, I'm amazed how we didn't actually come away from that game with anything.
Absolutely.
Such as how well we actually played.
Yeah, it's best away performance of the season. Look at the amount of chances, balls in the box we had that day, and then to lose, like, it's just a fluke goal, wasn't it? Ashley Young shot from the edge of the penalty area, hit Lewis Dunk and went right into the opposite.
Yeah, it was going wide,
corner.
That shot,
yeah,
as well.
There's nothing you can do about that. Even then, after that, Brighton attacked, had chances. It was just, you know, as we said, best away performance of the season. In a bit more luck, they'd have come away with something, but if they play like that tonight, then I think that.
But
therein lies the point, isn't it? If we did play like that again, then I think we would get something out of it. Because as Glenn Murray said in his interview this week with Dion Dublin, Houghton has given the strikers a little bit more license to go that bit further forward. Now, one of the things that we had with a problem with playing Man United is that we had some great balls into the box and no one was there to polish them off. You just play that 5-10 yards further forward, we'd have had two or three players lining up for it, and we could have actually then turned them over. Now, I don't think Man United are going to be that bad again, as bad again as they were against us.
They're under an awful lot of pressure, aren't they, at the moment? They're out of Europe now. They've got no chance of winning the league.
Does that put pressure on them, though? I mean, this is the only trophy that they've got left to win, realistically.
Yeah, exactly.
So this is the one they're going to go for.
Yeah, so that's
so is it pressure, or is it you just think, well, this is the one we're going to go for?
I think that if United had got through in the Champions League, would Mourinho have made more changes? Probably. I think tonight
we've got the international break coming after it as well. So I mean, there's no excuse not to play a full strength team. And it's a quarterfinal.
It's an international break for some, for the actual fixture list, but it's not for the players, because most of them are going to be off on international duty.
Well, no, it is for most of our players, because they didn't actually get selected out.
Well, I was actually thinking Man United in this instance, but yes.
Go on.
No, it's, I don't disagree with the notion of Dunk Stevens or Murray not getting part of this. I mean, we're talking about it. It's the spine of our team that we believe has a sniff of getting into the England side. What I'm most perturbed about, what Gareth Southgate said, was that, you know, he's picking players on current form, and that's clearly not the case. I can understand if he just turned around and said Murray's not good enough, then fair enough, that's a point, and it's just that he's on a purple patch at the moment, and good for him. But to actually turn around and go against his own point of reasoning and have it that I'm picking players on current form, and Danny Welbeck, all right, he scored a couple this week, but he's done sod all this season.
It was an embarrassing dive, though, wasn't it?
That was a shocker. That
the
was.
Other thing with the squad is you've got four goalkeepers and only three real strikers, Rashford, Vardy and Welbeck.
Yes.
So why not take Murray? Have a look at him in training. You don't have to play him. Just have a look.
I mean, I would argue the point. Okay, yeah. I mean, we all laugh about the notion of Glenn Murray getting called up, but he is the guy that's in form at the moment. And I mean, we last week were using the yardstick of if something happens to Kane. Well, something's happened to Kane, and
yeah, but you're not doing a compare and contrast.
No, we're not. But
Harry Kane does far more than Glenn Murray can ever do. Murray, yeah, it does is there. He's not exactly a bulldozer, but he's made peace with his limitations. He doesn't have as much in the locker as the others that you've mentioned there.
But you know, you're
therefore that's not what Southgate is after.
You're 1-0 down. You need a goal in the last 15 minutes. Who are you going to throw on?
But it's down to the supply lines. As Glenn always says, it's down to the supply lines.
Well, he's a goal scorer, isn't he? Put the ball in the penalty box and Murray will score your goals.
Yes.
I mean, if you've got someone like Raheem Sterling who can do that, I mean, he's doing it for Man City.
Yeah.
So, I mean, whether he can do it on a wet Tuesday
in northwest London,
on a wet Tuesday night in Russia, dodging
bullets. Yeah, no, quite.
But no one was saying that Murray should go to the World Cup. We were just saying he probably, on current form, when you look at the England squad and who is available, he probably, you'd say he deserves a call-up at least. I'm not saying play against Italy.
But I mean, the argument is, you used this yourself. You said there's four goalkeepers there. Why is Joe Hart in that squad? He's not playing for West Ham, and even when he does, he drops a wicket. You've got, I mean, the number one is going to, it's got to be between Butland and Pickford, and Nick Pope is very much deserves to be there.
Yeah.
defence, yeah. Well,
would you say that Mawson should be ahead of Dunk?
I think what goes in Mawson's favour is the fact he's probably got one more year of Premier League experience.
Maybe.
That's the only reason I can think that he's ahead of Dunk. I've only seen Mawson the two games, yeah, and
but
I wasn't.
You've got the fella at Leicester as well, whose name escapes me.
But yeah, I suppose that probably what counts against Lewis Dunk is the relative lack of experience in the top division. I get that point. Likewise, Stevens. Murray's got a little bit more experience. I think his age and his relative limitations are counting against him.
But
give it another year. I mean, when we completely screw it up in Russia this year and then we start going on to Euro 2020, then that's when, let's put it this way, if Dunk isn't in that first selection in September after the World Cup, then you get to realise he's probably never going to play for England.
Okay.
Well, I would guess.
Well, let's hope he does. And we'll leave it there. That is all we've got time for this week. So, of course, thank you so much to Alan Wares. Thank you to Steve Bailey. Glad you've made it all the way up to Manchester. And I've been Ailey Patton. We'll see you again next week. Thanks so much for listening. See you soon. Cheers. Bye. Down from the glen came the marching men with their shields and their swords. Fight the fight they believe to be right. Overthrow the overlords. To the towns where there was plenty, they brought plunder.
saw it in flame. When they left, the town was empty, and children would never play again. See you.